Okay, well, great. Again, thanks everyone for being on the call as usual. Practice doesn't work without all of us participating. And so this particular call, essentially the group of folks on this call is what I would describe as our extended practice family in some way. And essentially that is the folks of practice who regularly participate and support practice, the folks that play the many and varied roles that really makes practice work. So that would be people who come on retreat regularly, all of those familiar voices from calling into open air or the year long. And then, of course, people who support practice in a lot of other ways, such as the stewards and probably many ways that all of us aren't familiar with, but do help practice to move along. So, okay, yeah, that's the group of folks we have today. And then joining us, as you all know by now, is both Sherry and Ashwini. Yeah, was that Sherry or Ashwini?
And it's Ashwini. Just that there were a bunch of people who were invited who weren't able to make this call. So as we heard people coming on, if you've missed a name or somebody you don't recognize, it's because they were invited and indicated that they couldn't make the call. So we're a much wider group than just the people on the call, Chris.
Oh, got it. There, yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you bet.
Yeah.
The recording will go out to other folks at some point. Yeah. Okay, perfect. And so Sharon and Shwini are joining us this afternoon, and there's I don't know how you all describe it. We'll all find out here in a moment, but a shift in direction for practice. So with that, I will turn it over to Sharon and Shwini, and let me know if you need anything along the way.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
Certainly.
So This has been a long time coming. I will let you know, and I think you'll all know very shortly that nothing about this was easy to come to, and yet here we are. And what this is that a decision has been made to relocate the monastery. And there are several reasons for that I will tell you. No particular order, all of them feeling pressing to me, feeling probably of equal importance. The first one is that, as many of you know, or probably most of you know, we are in the direct path of the wildfires that are systematically consuming California. We've had two very close calls. Twice we've needed to be evacuated, not in this recent spate of fires, but since we have been here. And so it is just something that I have grown increasingly aware of and concerned about. And the reason that I think this year it's come so into my attention is that historically we would hit middle to late October and it would begin to rain, and we would have enough rain that the dry season is over and we breathe a sigh of relief that the forest fires are finished for the year. Last year, the devastating fires really got going in November, if I'm remembering that correctly. We had our rain, and then it proceeded to dry out enough that when the fires came, they were a tremendous surprise to everybody. So having 320 acres, often inhabited by, not inhabited is not the, but visited by folks who are in the process of learning to pay attention. Let's put it that way. But don't spend the majority of their time in presence. And we have these people scattered all over this property. With the Paradise fire that happened last year, we know that people, there were many people who were caught in their cars, trying to get out of the area that was burning. And so the thought of a fire coming through and us finding out about it, trying to round people up, trying to get them to vehicles, trying to get them to safety, I've just realized that I don't want the that responsibility. I don't want the karma of that. I don't want the responsibility of it. And there's that. And that's, you know, that's, those are the people on the property who we may or may not even be able to find, because even though the guidance is don't go out walking around at night, they many times people just choose to do that anyway because, of course, they feel like they're qualified to be in charge of their experience. So that's that. And then we have the people who live on the property who are definitely able to pay attention, but that doesn't necessarily mean a fire coming through in the middle of the night is going to respect the fact that, that they're aware and present and know what's happening. So that's one piece
and
of it.
And Sherry, if I might add a piece of information to that, we have increasingly also lost our ability to get communication with the property. The cell signal service has deteriorated, and recently, and Bob and a few people can speak to that, our attempt to boost the cell service so that we could actually be in communication with the people on the property has also sort of not panned out.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and of course, people have never been able to access internet from their hermitages. So, you know, in the office, we can communicate if somebody's in the office, but at night, they're not. So, yes, that's another really important, terrifying piece of it for me. So the second piece of it is that when we moved onto that property, people who were there at that time, we were all fascinated by the fact that there were no animals anywhere. There were no birds, there were no squirrels, there was just no anybody on that property. And over the years, the animals have come. And at this point, we have everybody, including bears and a lot of rattlesnakes who were probably there when we first got there. But the other group who has decided to join us is mountain lions. And we have not had a retreat that I know of this season during which someone has not seen a mountain lion. And again, the responsibility. We'll have people, we ask people to use their flashlight at night when they're walking around, and with regularity someone will say, well, you know, I just like to test my eyes and practice being able to get around in the dark, okay? That's called making yourself a meal. We have been really fortunate that nobody has had a dangerous encounter. The people who have seen the mountain lions report that they're just watching the human beings. There's none of them has been aggressive or that sort of thing. But what happens, of course, usually when there's an encounter with a mountain lion or a bear, again, the bears are around all the time, but they don't bother us. But the danger is getting between a mother and a baby. And then the human, of course, is seen as a threat, and that's when the mother will become aggressive. So, again, this is not, you know, knowing that there are mountain lions on the property, somebody seeing one in a year at a distance, that's one thing. When they're close enough into the building that people are seeing them with that kind of regularity, that's a signal to me that this is not a safe place. Again, if you spend time there, you know that the nearest medical attention is a very long ways away down a dirt road and then across the county. So we have been extremely fortunate in the time that we've been there. And with all of the climate change things that are happening, I'm just not willing at this point to push our luck. We'll finish out this season, which admittedly makes me a little nervous. And, you know, we will just hope for the best. And we are preparing to put the property on the market and to look for our new location for the monastery. The other thing that is true, that is more true for me even than whatever concern I have for fires and mountain lions and that sort of thing, is that as again, most of you have noticed, if you've been with me recently, I'm aging. As it turns out, I'm actually the only person with a background and skill set, expertise, whatever you want to call it, to be able to run a place that is off the grid. Everything about that place is idiosyncratic. It takes a lot to maintain it. The most recent one, we finished a retreat. 2 days after the retreat ended, the pump went out. Getting the pump up out of the ground and getting a new one in is an epic adventure. And, of course, what people are living from in the interim is the water that's stored in a tank up the hill. And so people just what people go through in order to try to save enough water to get through to this we don't know when period when the water is going to come back. The photovoltaic system, the solar, is nearing the end of its life. It's all going to be need to be replaced in not that many years. It's just it's at a time in my life when I would actually like to devote myself to monastic practice myself rather than running a facility where other people can have that opportunity. I would like for us to find a place where we can all have more of that, even with the monks. Running a retreat center is way too much time at computers and in offices, way too much time spent repairing things, just doing maintenance work, such that the amount of, not that it's not good practice, I think each one of them would say it's an incredible lifestyle and a wonderful practice, and having things be a little more manageable for all of us at this juncture would probably not be something anyone would be resistant to. So those are really the three. Ashwini, does it feel like that's a good time to see if anybody has any questions, or did you want to speak to
I want to obliquely also speak to a fourth component, which we can only say in the way we're saying it right now, which is there was a way in which, in order to manage the facility, one strategy that we had looked at was bringing in people to assist us with the management of the property, whether it's plumbers or handy people or whatever else. And as many of you know, there's a way in which that can be a liability as well to the organization. And so a financial liability to that organization for the first time in our history, we might have to contend with that as well. So we are vulnerable, I think, and more vulnerable than we've ever been, which is why I think we're plus the thing that Sherry mentioned about having an operating facility that makes us less of our time and resources dedicated to managing that facility it just feels like the right time to make that choice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let me just spend a few minutes talking about what next or what now, right, Sherry, so that people have some information to ask questions. What we have at the monastery is incredible. It doesn't exist anywhere else, at least in my experience, right? We have a place that is completely dedicated to waking up and ending suffering and provides an environment that assists us to do so. It's a refuge. And so in relocating the monastery, we don't want to lose that environment, that community, that place of practice in its spirit or in essence, and that's what we would hope to recreate. that's how we would hope to recreate, with the caveat that Sherry mentioned, which is its operating footprint is much easier. It does not take a special skill set in order to manage that facility, and it's much smaller, and so we can manage it ourselves. That is certainly the intention. What that means in some ways, though, is that we are recreating the monastery, not necessarily recreating the retreat center, meaning that we don't necessarily want to find a place where people can be on retreat, but everyone who wants to do an individual monastic practice like the visiting monks are welcome to be part of that facility. That's what that facility would be designed for. So just that hopefully it's a different model. There's not a lot of thinking that has been going into what that duplicate property would look like or how we are going to offer this particular property that we're living on currently to the world, or who would take it, or what would that look like. It's been a lot of thinking in coming to terms with what this decision would mean for us and what would mean for those people who call it their home, both spiritual and physical, and physical and spiritual. And so we don't have any answers, but we can't move forward until we communicate the decision, communicate the intention, and then move forward with it. And then the last thing hopefully. I would say is, go ahead.
Well, just hopefully with everyone's energy.
With everyone's
moving
energy.
Moving forward with
exactly.
Everyone's energy. Yeah.
Yeah. And this will be our opportunity to create that spiritual home again, just in a different place and with a different footprint. And then I was going to say something, and it completely went out of my mind, Sherry. So
sorry.
That's okay. It'll come
take
back.
Take a minute.
So at
yeah,
this point, shall we have people put themselves in the queue, or?
Yes, if we make that movement, Chris, Ashwini will recall what she was going to say. I think
okay,
that's
great.
How that works. As soon as we're going to do something else, then here it is. Yeah,
that's the opening.
Did you get
it, Ashwini? I have
to drop in. No, not yet. But go ahead; it'll come back.
All right. And so, does this feel like the good time to open it up?
I think so. Ashwini? And let's just see. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thanks,
okay, so
Chris.
Typical thing for putting yourself in the queue: press *6. Okay. Here we go then. First caller, you are live, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Pasha from San Francisco.
Hello, Pasha.
So thank you for this call and opportunity to participate. And there's a lot of things coming up with that.
Mm-hmm.
No, first is I feel like it's a call to maybe participate more or be kind of provide more support, whatever is needed. First thing comes in the mind in kind of financially to, with relocation or with maintenance of the monastery, I feel like I can certainly participate more there. And the second part, I was just there as a visiting monk just this summer, just like when months ago, feels like. And it's grown to me to be the place, I'm so connected with. But but it's not only the land, it's practice, it's that group of people, it's practice, it's a monastery, those things. Kind of together are one thing for me, And now seeing them as, well, there is a land, there is a monastery, there is practice, and those things are hard to separate. But at the same time, I'm there to practice. I'm not there just because it's, in some beautiful nature and such a wonderful property there to have a vacation, which I enjoy a lot. But I feel like I'm at the place of, like, I'll go anywhere, you know, to find that place of practice, to find that support, and that connection is a very important part of my life right now.
Well, Pasha, I will tell you that as we move toward this decision, we did think of you, since you're someone who's there, regularly as a visiting monk, and it's like, ooh, how are we going to break this news to Pasha? For me, the how of that is basically what you said, that we want to find a place where that level of practice can continue. And we hope we can find a place that is, in its own way, as beautiful as this place. And then that the energy that we all bring to it will, is it imbue? Is that the word I want? When you get into the marrow of the bones, that feeling that we have when we walk onto the monastery grounds, that it is, as Shweni said just a minute ago, a refuge. It's a holy place. It's a sacred place. And to me, that's what the people over the years who have come there to train and practice, that's what everybody has put into that place, and we can put that into another place and learn to love it just as much and care for it just as passionately as we have loved and cared for this place.
Yes, and that's the last thing I want to share is, as part of visiting monk this year, I was cleaning the outhouses. And this was the first year when I saw, what are they called, bees with a long body that build houses, the wasps, I think.
Like mud daubers. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they start to build the house inside the outhouse, and it looks like a little paper thing that gets first attached there, and then they swarm there and they walk tirelessly, building that house step by step, and growing it with, this material is paper. I don't know how they produce it, but it's built by such a tiny, tiny steps, and it grows, and it grows in the house. And then I was there at night. They can't fit into this house yet, but they all are covering it up, and one
disturbed
them. Yes, and they are covering it up, and they look like a ball of wasps. Covering that house. And when I disturb them accidentally with a flashlight, they all get up, move in sync around that, and reposition and settle in again. And it felt, and then they did this again and again. And I saw it several times, how they transfer that, how they're not losing the community, how they are rebuilding that house through such a little steps. That was so inspiring to see that, this is how nature does. It's not, it's like they're ready to lose that house, but they're not gonna, disperse and give up. They're moving. I don't know like how it starts. It's probably like a mama bee goes there and then everybody else, join in that community. So I feel like we are now that community that can rebuild the house in any place where it's possible.
Wow, that's beautiful, Pasha. It's a wonderful image.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Gasho.
Yeah, thank you, Pasha.
And it dropped in what went out. Yes, right. Sure. Two things that I think it's one speaks to what Pasha said about transition. We don't know what that transition is going to look like. We don't, but we are going to be looking for a place to move to, and hopefully we find that place shortly because of the dangers that you mentioned, and that the information that we're receiving from life and the clarity that that movement is important to make. So just to know that we're working through the transition as we get information. So if we find a way to move, somebody wants the property and we haven't found a place yet to move, we're going to have to work out what that transition looks like. If we find a place to move before the monastery changes hands, we've got to work what that looks like. And all we can do and all we will do, as we always have done, is to provide everybody who is a steward of this practice the information we have in order to be able to be present to what the practice needs in any moment, whether it's financially or assistance packing things up or building new houses on the new property or whatever that might be. It will unfold. And I think what we've practiced so far will assist us to be present to what it is that is needed in the moment, to communicate about it and to participate in it, because it is that movement that Pasha was talking about. We're going to do this together, however it unfolds.
However it unfolds.
And the second part is, I think we are going to action one aspect of this immediately, which is the retreats in October will be possibly our last retreats at the monastery, because next year we'll be looking for places to hold retreats that won't incur the same liability in terms of danger or mountain lions or financial vulnerability or any of those other things we talked about.
Big. A lot going on. No reason to be bored.
Yeah.
Definitely not. And ready for another caller?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, let's do next caller. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rob from Pennsylvania. And I was just sitting here thinking about how bored I am. And now I'm now not bored anymore because there's lots to consider.
Yes. Yeah. All
that's a joke because I never get bored. But well, I just wanted to comment that I'm sure, you know, there might be many people on the call that recognize that, you know, in management of nonprofits, one of the biggest dangers for a nonprofit is to overinvest in capital resources. And, you know, I learned that in graduate school 20 years ago. And I've noticed, in, you know, outside of the monastery, it happens all the time. And and the decision that you're making, I mean, I feel really, really sad. And I didn't build those buildings. I wasn't there building them. So it's a tribute to some real bravery, I think, to do the right thing for the long-term health of the Sangha.
Oh, thank you, Rob. Thank you for putting it that way. That's, that's, thank you. It does feel like that. It does feel like that. And one of the things for me as the person who's, you know, sort of been in the steering position for a lot of years, I've watched organizations, especially spiritual organizations, go along as with no preparation for what happens when the teacher dies. And the what happens when the teacher dies is everything just goes into chaos, and oftentimes there's a lot of personality / karma stuff that happens that really can, in many cases, pretty much undo what had been done, built, created over the life of the teacher. And so for us not to go through that would be a great thing. We just, you know, it just the way we'd like life to be. It just goes on smoothly from transition to transition to transition to transition.
Yes, yeah. And this is this will be a great opportunity for all of us to embrace the change that is constant to life.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Just to kind of wake up to nothing is constant here. Nothing's going to last forever. If it hasn't changed in a while, it's just because we haven't been looking closely enough, because it's been changing all along.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Rob.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. And here's our next caller. Would you please introduce yourself?
Aloha, this is Laura.
Hello.
And hi. And what struck me right away, besides the sadness, was how this change is being modeled in such a compassionate way. And you know, the whole decision-making process, the coming to, you know, coming to Sangha, and it's so heart-opening to me. I mean, it's just such a great modeling in my books. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the image that, I have a question, but first, the image that came to me was in our little community here several years ago, we built a new library about 2 miles away from the original one. And when it came time to move the books, everybody got together and stood side by side and moved those books one by one from one space to the next, just passing them along. And that's the image that came when you talked about the transition and moving to the next step. And so,
Laura, if I may at this juncture, a number of years ago, I hiked across the island of Molokai, and I followed a trail. It's from the... You know, I was brought in by boat, and I got to swim to shore with my little backpack and everything that I would need to make that trek down through the valley of the island and then up the sea cliffs on the other side. And what I was following, although there was no identifiable trail, but what I was following was the way the people, the indigenous people, move the, is it he poo, something like that. It's a word, something like that. And it's the round rocks that they build their, that's a part of their religious services. And
the
that's
heyow,
how they, heyow, that's it, heyow. That's how they move the rocks from one side of the island to the other in exactly the way you describe moving those books.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there is a Hawaiian word for that kind of moving, and I don't remember what it is. But
well, you'll find out and let me know, okay? Because that
I
is,
will.
That is going to be our model, just standing shoulder to shoulder and doing our part to move it along. Just move it along.
Yeah.
Well, there was another piece.
So just my question is, and maybe this is too early to ask, but is it being considered that the new monastery might not be based in California? Are there other
It is.
options.
It is being, okay. That is being considered. Yeah, that is
okay.
being considered.
Okay.
Yeah. So for me, there are a lot of factors about that, and many of them are the ones that we've already talked about. So it has to be someplace that has an environment that is more in keeping with our purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has to be affordable, which, you know, California and affordable don't often appear in the same sentence. So, we're open to whatever comes our way as a possibility.
Great. Thank you.
I'm
going to send you an email if that's okay.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, our sangha is international. So it's not
mm-hmm.
like California is necessarily a convenient location. It's not that we have more Californians in the sangha than people from the East Coast or the South or, any other part of the world, for that matter.
And I love, just before I leave so someone else can jump on, I love the modeling of all options are open.
Whatever life takes us, tumbling along with the tumbling tumbleweed, as the old song went. You know? Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you so much. And Laura, if I may add to that, right, that there's a place of clarity being revealed, right? And it's such a practice place of not this, not this, not this. And so being willing to let that process of revelation guide the next step, I think, is the workshop that we're all going to be in, right? Because as we started to look at this, it can't be a fireplace. It has to be affordable. It has to be operationally feasible. As Sherry said, it has to be an environment that is in alignment with our purpose. So stillness and quiet needs to be part of it, but it has to be accessible, right? So people can come there and practice. And so as we start to become clear, almost like a vision board of what it has to be, I think the materiality of what it is becomes clearer and clearer, and that's a joyful process.
Mm-hmm.
And
very
growing,
exciting.
Yeah, the growing faith, you know, I don't know if growing is the right word, but just the faith that what is for us is for us, and it will be, and it'll be revealed when it's just like we found this place, right? I mean, it was an absolute magic journey to finding this place, and I just have absolute faith that the same thing is going to happen again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ever-expanding faith. Yeah.
Ever-expanding faith.
Thank you so much.
Here we go. Thank you, Laura.
All right. Thank you, Laura. And here is our next caller. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Danny here.
Hey, Danny.
Hi. Well, there's a lot coming up and moving through, and I think what I most want to express is my gratitude for practice, and that we have the container of practice to receive this and to move with that. I wouldn't even want to try to imagine what this conversation and what the upcoming months would look like with a group of people this large in any other context than ours. And I'm so grateful for practice and and for also, I think it was referred to a little, just imagining what a change this big might do to a different community, and how we have nothing to fear because we know how to be present to what is, and in this moment, and what the next moment, and the next moment, and whatever life brings us, we have, again, the ever expanding faith that we are adequate to face it and to, yeah. And to, yeah.
Yeah, and this is it's a wonderful combination, isn't it? It's the proof of that, and it's that we often say these are the times that we practice for.
Yes.
Right, and so confronting something like this, just having it confirmed that, yeah, we're ready for this. We can do this. We're not going to lose sight of our practice and what we choose for our lives just because there's some kind of big change. We're not going to do that. And that's a special opportunity, right? Because life is big, and stuff happens all the time that is a surprise that we never considered. And are we ready for that? Are we going to be okay with that? Well, this is one of those kinds of times and places for us to practice with that. Just confirms, as you say, yeah, we have a practice that can get us through anything.
Exactly. Yep. Thank you so much.
Thank
deeply
you,
grateful.
Danny. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny. And Sherry Anishwini here is our next caller. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Janet calling.
Hey, Janet.
Hi. I just echo everything that has already been said so beautifully. I feel so privileged to be on this call. And to be, and for you sharing everything that you have shared about what's going on. And what first arose for me was back, how many years ago was it, when the monastery was going to close because of financial.
We ran out of money.
Mm-hmm. And the monastery was going to close. And I remember in that moment when we heard about that, just like this total shock. And, you know, and this whole rallying to get it going back again. I mean, I don't know what all happened, but, you know, we all gave money and we all supported whatever was going on to keep it going. And this time feels so different. This time
Go ahead. No, you go ahead. I want to speak to that, but not yet. Go ahead.
Yeah, it just feels so different because when you said it and when you laid everything out, I was like, yeah, absolutely. Even though there's so much sadness about it, it's like, yes. And I Sherry, I want to say, especially the part about you and your age, just because I can relate to that. Like, oh, yeah. I mean, just imagining you when you went and started, and when you first got on the land, and it was like, yeah, we're going to do this, and just the amazing place that it is, and all the energy and sweat and everything that went into it, and it's like, yeah, and now it's a different time.
Mm-hmm.
I just now really appreciate that.
Now it's time for
you,
other people.
Yes, and I appreciate you considering that for yourself, if I'm saying that right.
Yeah, I think you are. When we spoke, actually, it was with Bob earlier about this, and he said he talked about being a part of finishing up the building and what that was like, the energy that was there to build that building and get it done and actually pass inspections. And now there's a whole bunch of Sangha who have no experience of anything other than that place has always been there, those people have always been there, you know, that's just how it is. And he said, you know, this is a wonderful opportunity for a whole new group of people to have their time of participating in the growth, the development, mm-hmm.
And it's true.
It's like having kids, you know, and launching them out into being the ones who are going to take over the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And what also is coming up for me is just that however it transpires, I just see it's going to be amazing once again.
Yeah. I think so.
I don't see anything else.
Yeah, because of this group of people and because of this extraordinary practice. Right? Because I've told this story many times, but it's a good story. Being at a book conference early on, we probably had two books out, and the whole practice was really kind of brand new. And I was talking with a fellow from another center, and about our practice. And he said, "Well, the thing that you can know is you're always going to have a smaller, more mature Sangha." And at the time, I didn't actually really get what he was saying. But lo, these many years later, I know exactly what he's saying. Mm-hmm. The people who are drawn to this practice are deep and thoughty, mature, spiritual people who really do come to practice because they want to practice. And that makes all the difference.
Yeah. So, thank you. I know this has been, this has been a very thoughtful, I'm sure.
It's been a lot of looking.
Place. Yeah.
Whole lot of looking for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. And just that we do have an amazing Sangha that is all standing side by side ready for what's next.
Yes.
How can we support and all of that?
I just got goosebumps when you said that. Yeah. That's exactly right. Mm. Yeah. Here for practice, here for each other. Committed. Committed to have this available for ourselves and for one another. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Janet.
Deep appreciation. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Janet. And Sherry, there does seem to be two parts of this. It seems like people have been mentioning it, and that one is the kind of the loss of something that we all know and love and have been familiar with for a long time. And like you say, it can be in that place of assuming it will be there forever. So there's that piece of it. And then there's just that total thrill for the possibilities that can open up in this kind of a change, which is you know, just energizing. So, both sides of those things. All right, here's our next caller. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Tracy.
Hey, Tracy.
Hi. It's funny, I wasn't sad until I got unmuted. I'm surprised there's this emotion, but I'm really there. My heart's really there. I too am in a similar place, just really looking at the space that I've been keeping and my priorities. And I'm actually working on creating a resume, which I haven't created a resume since 1983. There's something has arisen for an opportunity that is much more in alignment with what's in my heart. So I have been noticing in myself just how much gets stirred up around change. And mm-hmm. I just am loving this call about just the growing faith and, you know, now it's time mm-hmm. for other people and just really that, like, carrying this, like, you know, it's just we're continuing to carry the torch and the content of it just looks different. You know, the space might look different, but the spirit of what's moving forward is even more powerful. Or I don't even say more powerful, but the spirit that is, it's propelling the spirit forward, you know, kind of freeing up some of the energies that have been just, you know, dispersed in other areas. And so I really get it. And I'm very inspired. And
you know, we're supposed to dread change, even though life is changing every split second. We can't even begin to wrap our heads around how rapidly life is changing all the time. We're meant to dread it and to see the markers in life as loss. There's a building toward, and then the creative process, and then it's meant to hit a plateau, and the dread begins for the dissolution of the dissolution, I guess would be a better preposition there. And there's no reason for that, right? Because life just goes on. And all of the changes that we have each seen in our own lives are proof of that. And so why not this? Why would we want, you know, like reminds me of the, you know, the young couple gets married and they buy a house and they start having their children and then they age and the children leave home and they retire and then it's time to sell the family home and downsize. And this is seen as some sort of a tragedy, right? This is, and yet it's perfectly in keeping with the flow of life.
Mm, yeah. So true.
Yeah. So those kinds of changes and learning to welcome them, to welcome where are we in life now? What now? Where are we now? What do we need now?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Tracy.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. And I think we've got time for one more. So next caller, would you please introduce yourself?
This is Bev. I got okayed here. I didn't really mean to speak, but I just echo everything that has been said. I just feel that whatever needs to be done, that's what we're practicing for. So kind of a newbie to the thing, I look forward to, I think it's exciting and really echo the change because I'm aging as well. And you just have to go with the flow. And I think that's what you're doing here. And I support it. And I feel like everyone, I can project that everyone on this call does as well. So I'm just excited. I think it's exciting to think what's ahead. So, you know, I'm
now
here, whatever, you know, I'm not leaving. Yeah. So I'm just see how it all plays out.
Good. That's, of course, our hope. You know, as Ashwini and I particularly have been talking about it for the last little while, but that, you know, that it is let's all pull together then. It's not a time to say, well, you know, that's the past and that's over and so I'm going to go find something. No, this is the new and exciting, and we're going to do this together. Nothing has changed. That's the important. We're relocating the monastery. You know, it's so much of our practice, as you know, living a long ways away from the monastery. So much of our practice happens virtually. And that's not going to change. I mean, there would be people who didn't get the memo on this, who might never know that the monastery changed location because they never go to the monastery, but they're involved in virtual meditation and they go to away retreats and they're reflective listening buddies and all of that sort of thing. And so in that way, nothing happens with the practice. Nothing changes about the practice. And yet there's this tremendous opportunity for involvement and wholehearted participation and all those things that we love so much.
Well, I look forward to it. I think it's going to be exciting to see how
mm-hmm.
where life leads us. So
exactly.
So, gotcha.
Where are
Thank
we
you.
Going? Thank
yes.
you, Beth.
Okay. Okay.
Go happy.
I will.
All right.
Thanks, Bev.
Sherry?
And, go ahead, Joni.
Oh, if we do have, I don't know how many more people are in the queue, Chris, but do we have many more people in the queue?
You know, we have about another 10 or 12 folks in the queue. So I think we had originally scheduled this call to be an hour long, but if we want to go a little longer, I don't know.
I would like not to do that simply because I want to honor people's commitment. Not to spring that on them. The thing that I wanted to bring in at this juncture is the importance of not talking about this, because there's a whole bunch of Sangha who are not on this call. And what we're going to do is do a downloadable audio conversation instead of an email to let those people know that this is happening. And so I would really like for no one to get this information sort of as a shock out of any processing context.
So, Sherry, with that, if someone's calling into the year-long or open air, to just be absolutely mindful about not hinting
yes.
at it
yes.
or mentioning
yes,
it in any way or in any fashion.
Yeah, and, yeah. And until then, everybody has received the information. That I think that would be. Ashwini, do you have an opinion on that?
No, that would be wonderful. So we've been doing this in waves, and so this is the first group of the wider group. Then there's another group that we're going to, as Sherry said, do the email to. I mean, the download audio to, and then there's another group that we want to communicate with. And so again, we want to do this as thoughtfully and mindfully as we possibly can, so no one needs to go to conditioned mind about it and suffer as a consequence.
Yeah. Yeah.
So again,
yeah.
Sherry, I don't know if the 10 folks who are on the queue need an opportunity to process, perhaps you and I can look at it and see if we can reconvene this group or something to that effect.
Oh, absolutely. And there might be people on the call right now who aren't in the queue, but by the time it all sinks in and rolls around a little bit, might want to continue a conversation. I'm hoping this is the first of many conversations mm-hmm. in which we're going mm-hmm. to be looking at, okay, where are we now and where are we now?
Right. And it is this is the stewardship of practice, right? These are, we are all the guardians of it. And so,
mm-hmm.
It is, as everyone has echoed, a collective process.
Yes, and that's how we want it to be. No unilateral decisions. Mm-hmm. All right.
Very good.
Are we at time? Are we good? Yeah?
Yeah, we are. We're a couple minutes
okay.
over, so we're good shape, Sherry. So.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you for guiding us through this, Chris. And
you bet.
And yeah, thank you, Ashwini, for all
everything.
That happened.
All of it.
Yeah, for all of it. All right.
And
take
as we
care.
Always
we'll
say
all
in this
touch,
place,
huh?
as we always say in this uh-huh. place, the best is yet to come. So
the best is yet to come. Yeah. All right.
Can't go wrong.
Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Go happy.
All right. Bye bye.
Deep guy show, Sherry.
Yeah, show.